Hi, welcome to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFTFM. This is our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill, and I'm really happy to welcome back to the program today our friend from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, Dr. Chris Sanchez. And we're going to be talking today about foals and horses. The foal season will be coming up before too long, and we can talk about how to get ready for that if you have a horse. And we'll also maybe take your calls, but certainly I hope you take your pledges, because this is our fall 2018 membership campaign. You can pledge securely online at WUFT.org. Animal Airwaves Live is coming up after this news from NPR. Welcome to Animal Airwaves Live on WUFT 89.1, 90.1. This is our hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill, and I'm very glad you've tuned in today here on the 21st of September, 2018. And I'm really happy to welcome back to the program today our friend from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, Dr. Chris Sanchez. And our topic is going to be foals today. We're going to talk about sort of the approaching foal season, and we're going to learn about how we can keep our horses healthy and ensure that foals are delivered safely. And welcome back to the program, Dr. Sanchez. It's really been a while since you've been here. Time flies, but I'm glad to have you back.
Thanks so much, Dana. I'm happy to be here.
We think about foal season primarily beginning, what, around the first of the year, right?
Somewhere around the first of the year. Occasionally we get the Christmas Eve foal every once in a while. But in general, foals, at least in the thoroughbred industry, count January 1 as everybody's birthday. So foals born before that turn a year of age quite quickly. So in general, we like foals to be born after the first of the year. And really, in general, kind of February or so is when things start to get gearing up. The early season ones, it can be a little bit rough when it's really cold out and whatnot. Fortunately, in Florida, it's a much milder season than places farther up north when the foaling season starts a little bit later. But down here, we'll start in kind of mid-January usually, and then things will start to slow down and wrap up by May.
Okay. I think that the January 1 birthday for everybody is an interesting concept. There's got to be some reason that that's done.
Essentially, it's just logistically for a racing season for the thoroughbreds, there's got to be a racing season. And so you have to make the cutoff somewhere. And so with the calendar year, it makes the most sense. And so for North America, anyway, that works pretty well. In the Southern Hemisphere, obviously, their foaling season is going to be in our fall. So that's a little bit different. So, but yeah, that's the essential.
I mean, given sort of their natural tendencies, would horses be having their foals around that time of year anyway in January, February?
So, yeah, then if left to their own devices, the natural foaling season would be somewhere, you know, in the spring, essentially. Okay. And so it works pretty well because with horses, they're going to foal once a year, because gestation's round about 340 days on average, 342 days on average. And so that's about 11 months. And so they're really not going to foal more often than that, as opposed to, you know, animals with a much shorter gestational length.
You really anticipated one of my questions. So this means that right now, throughout Florida, there are a lot of pregnant mares.
There are a lot of pregnant mares.
So let's talk about how this process kind of gets underway. And I mean, we all sort of know how the birds and the bees work, but let's maybe think about what kind of considerations are at play before a mare even becomes pregnant.
So I think in general, that's probably a topic for another day, as far as getting them there. And, you know, I would probably focus more just on the foals once the mares are pregnant and ready to come out. But in general, timing of breeding is important, obviously, because if knowing the gestational length and knowing that you need to plan about 11 months out, the breeding season starts about a month later and runs about a month later than the foaling season, just logistically speaking. And so making sure the mares are healthy, making sure they're ready to be bred, thinking about, you know, all of those sorts of considerations are really important, and not to undermine that. But then once the mare is pregnant, then knowing the breeding date, so you can have an accurate gauge for foaling dates is really important. And one of the things that's interesting or different about mares as opposed to many other species is that gestational length in the horse can be actually quite variable. And so most mares are going to go around the same time of year. But the, you know, I said the average gestational length is about 340 to 342 days. But the range of normal foalings can go down to about 320 and up to about 365. So there are some mares that can stay pregnant a whole year. And so you can't, it's not like in people that you can look at the calendar and plan a C-section and things are going to go pretty well. In mares, because there's that much variability, you really kind of have to leave it to the mare herself to let you know when she's ready.
That's really remarkable. I mean, of course, in human pregnancy, a lot of, gauging when exactly the pregnancy began, it can sometimes be a little bit tricky. It's maybe not as planned out for many people as it would be if you were deliberately like breeding a horse where you could say, oh, we know that this happened on this day. But, you know, it sounds like once it happens, the length being variable, that's, you know, quite a bit different than human pregnancy where you can say about 40 weeks is what we would expect. And,
sure,
you know, maybe a couple weeks before or a couple weeks after, you know, is not uncommon. But it, outside of that window, it becomes, you know, quite a bit, you know, risky in some instances.
Sure. And in mares, if it goes too much earlier or later, then that can be a problem as well. But again, going to where my interest is, we have a whole separate group of folks that are whose specialty is the mare and getting them pregnant and managing the reproductive aspects of things. But my specialty is more once those foals come out, how do we make sure they're healthy? How do we keep them healthy and all those sorts of things? However, the gestational length and kind of knowing that how the mare's health and whether there were any problems leading up to delivery are important, an important consideration for how healthy that foal is likely to be.
So then let's move there. Let's talk about what happens when you arrive on the scene at a birth and what circumstances would necessitate your participation in the birth of a foal.
And so I'll put that as the input of a veterinarian in general, rather than me specifically.
Yeah.
And so So if a mare is sick leading up to delivery and things that, you know, general signs such as if she goes off feed and, you know, doesn't want to eat or looks lethargic or spikes a fever or things like that, one of the other important things to look for is the udder. And so if a mare starts to drip milk before she delivers, that's a really big warning sign. And one of the keys that looking at a mare to know when she's about ready to foal, the udder will start to develop and then, she'll start to have milk there, so getting ready for the foal's anticipated needs. And so if that happens earlier than the owner would expect, or if she actually starts dripping milk ahead of time, that can be a big problem because in foals, that first milk, which is called colostrum, is really, really important to kind of kickstart the foal's immune system because foals are born relatively what we call immunonaive, which is that they don't get antibodies against common pathogens from the mare's blood during gestation. They get all those antibodies from the first milk, which is the colostrum. And so a foal, normally a foal should be born, be able to right itself and roll up onto its chest within about 5 minutes or so. They should be able to stand within about an hour after they're born, and they should suckle within 2 hours after being born. And that first suckling from the colostrum, making sure there's good quality colostrum and that the foal suckles that, is really, really important for starting off that foal's immune system. So going back, if the mare drips milk before foaling, that colostrum is going to be on the ground instead of in the udder and ready to go into that foal. So that can be a big problem.
Right. So there's a finite amount of colostrum. After a certain amount of time, the mare is producing milk that doesn't have those same antibodies.
Correct.
Is there any way to synthetically mimic those antibodies should a horse lose out?
Sure. Yeah, and that's really important. And so if you know the mare's been dripping milk beforehand, and so know that colostrum is not available, many farms will bank colostrum and have that in the freezer to thaw and be ready to either give via a bottle where the foal suckles or have the veterinarian pass a tube down into the foal's stomach and give it that way. And so bank colostrum is one way. If that's not available, then we can actually give plasma. And so there's commercial companies available that that make equine plasma from horses that have been well vaccinated, so that have all the antibodies to the normal things that a foal would need. And so we can give that in a vein to the foal to kind of get it already into the vein and do it that way. So either giving colostrum in a tube or plasma IV will make up for that loss of colostrum.
Is that a rather rare circumstance, though?
You know, it happens pretty commonly because, you know, certainly not every, you know, probably 10% of foals might need something like that for one reason or another, because one of the reasons why a foal might need that is if the mare, you know, loses colostrum before they're born. Alternatively, if a foal is ill and isn't able to suckle, then they could need that. And so kind of part of the normal foaling exam, kind of going back to your question from a while ago, even if the foal is delivered normally, mare's healthy, foal's delivered normally, really within about 24 hours of that foal being born, it's really important to have a veterinarian come out, take a look at the foal, do a good physical exam, and doing a blood test to make sure that foal got enough colostrum is really important within that first 24 hours, so that if the foal didn't get enough colostrum, you can act before kind of it's too late.
Are there, before we move on, are there circumstances in which there might have been reason to believe that the foal itself before delivery could be somehow unhealthy?
Sure. And so most of the time, if the foal's not healthy before delivery, usually it's there are some congenital defects, obviously, that could lead to that. A more common situation is if there's a problem with the placenta. And so that placentitis or infection in the placenta is one of the things that can happen. Another kind of problem, less common nowadays, but mares are such that they can't handle having twins very well. And so many times if a mare has twins, that will cause her to abort at some point during pregnancy. Occasionally we do have twins that are born. And so in general, if twins are born, they will both be need some help, so to speak, because they'll be quite small and usually need a little bit of help in adapting to life outside the uterus.
I feel like we're just scratching the surface. I want to remind our listeners that this is Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFTFM. I'm Dana Hill. My guest is Dr. Chris Sanchez from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine. It is our fall 2018 membership campaign, as you have no doubt noticed. If you'd like to pledge your support for Animal Airwaves Live, our website is WUFT.org. Let them know what you think of the program. We'll be really glad to receive your support for this show. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFT-FM. I'm Dana Hill. This is our weekly hour-long show devoted to discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm glad you're listening today, and I'm really happy to have back on the show Dr. Chris Sanchez. And we're talking about foals, and we left off sort of talking about ensuring that a foal is kind of delivered in a healthy way and signs that things might be in trouble. But as we move forward, Dr. Sanchez, let's just assume that for the most part we've had a completely normal pregnancy and the delivery has been otherwise like routine.
Okay.
In which case, maybe there was no veterinarian on site, right? Mm-hmm. But you said that probably within 24 hours a foal should see a veterinarian?
In an ideal world, yes, and I know there's plenty of foals out there that have not. And but ideally, it's a really good idea to have a veterinarian look at that foal. It's called a newborn foal exam, and so that's a really common thing for equine veterinarians to do. And it's a great reason to, you know, hopefully you have a good relationship with your veterinarian that comes out to the farm, and this is kind of a normal matter of course. And so within that first 24 hours, the veterinarian will do a good physical exam, and like I said, ideally check an IgG, make sure the foal got enough colostrum and that things are going well, because really in general, if we look at when horses are at the greatest risk of bad things happening, the first week of life is really one of the periods of life that has the highest risk of problems, so to speak, because they're things go really well until they don't, and they can go really badly really quickly. And so that first 24 hours is a nice window to look to see, and the veterinarian can look for signs that things might not be going well. And infection or neonatal sepsis is by far the biggest cause of neonatal, we call, morbidity and mortality. So foals getting sick and foals dying. Sepsis is the biggest reason for that worldwide. And so kind of some really important things to look for to make sure your foal is healthy. Obviously, like I mentioned before, a foal should be standing within an hour, suckling within 2 hours, and the mare should pass her placenta within 3 hours. And really, you know, horses are prey species, so they should be up and ready to go pretty quickly. And so a normal foal should really do three things pretty well, which is eat, sleep, and suckle. And so most normal foals will suckle on average about 7 times an hour. They get up, they run around, they play, they lie down, they sleep. As soon as a foal gets up from sleeping, the first thing it should do is go have a suckle from the mare. And so if you notice that, you know, one of the things if a foal is sick is if they go stand by the mare and they know they should suckle, but they don't feel well enough to do so, then, you know, sometimes they stand back there, and when the foal goes back by the mare's udder, that's a sign to her that it's ready to suckle. And so she will release a hormone in response to that foal's presence called oxytocin, and that lets down milk. And so if a foal goes back to the udder but doesn't suckle, a lot of times they'll get milk dripped on their head. And so if you see a mare's udder that's big and streaming milk after they foal, or milk kind of dried on the foal's head, that's a sign that it probably isn't suckling like it should. And so that's a sign that something's wrong and you should call your veterinarian. If a foal has diarrhea, there's kind of a normal, so to speak, diarrhea that happens around between 5 and 10 days of age, with an average around 7, where foals can get mild diarrhea that's called the foal heat diarrhea, because that's about the time when mares come back into heat for the first time after they foal. Foals with foal heat diarrhea, they have diarrhea, but they don't care. They're bright, they're happy, they're suckling, they're running around, they don't really seem to care. But a foal that has diarrhea that doesn't want to suckle, or is lethargic, or is sleeping and not really getting up very much, that's an emergency, and that's a reason to call your veterinarian right away. And so those are probably two of a foal that's not suckling well, or isn't getting up and moving around really well, or a mare's udder that's full and streaming and the foal's not suckling, those are all reasons why you should get your vet out pretty quickly.
Are there ready solutions for any of those problems?
Ready solutions sounds awesome. And if only it were that simple. But most of the time, like I said, sepsis is usually the reason for that, and that's an infection. And so the kind of ready solution is usually going to be antibiotics. But there are not all infections are created equally. So there's going into it and seeing what you think is most likely and making sure that you're kind of on the right track and checking blood and doing some things are important. And we as veterinarians try and be really quite adaptable to the owner's wallet as well. And so we try and do kind of as little or as much as we need to get the foal on its way in a way that's most economically reasonable for the client, but yet providing the best possible care for the foal.
Sometimes with human babies, you know, a little while after birth, the baby might weigh even a little bit less than at birth, because sometimes it can take a little while to get the nursing thing down, and for mom and baby too. Does that ever happen with foals? Do they ever lose a little bit of weight, or are they pretty much on an upward arc the whole time?
That Dana sums up predators versus prey. Predators have that luxury, prey do not. And so horses have to pretty much get on with it pretty quickly. And so it's really unusual for foals to lose weight. Foals, an average kind of normal or, you know, kind of hot or warm-blooded breed foal, so quarter horses, thoroughbreds, warm-bloods, those sorts of foals gain on average a kilo or 1 to 2 kilos a day, so 2 to 4 pounds a day. So they have to get on with it pretty quickly, and they'll actually drink about 20 to 25% of their body weight in milk in a day. So those mares are putting out a huge volume of milk to let those little guys grow pretty quickly.
Yeah, you mentioned that, of course, one of the things that a foal needs to do is kind of be up and going. Are there circumstances that might lead to a foal not really being as, ambulatory or what have you?
Sure, and those can also be a big problem. And some of the things that can do that, sometimes foals can be born with essentially crooked legs, so to speak. And so there's a couple different things that can happen with their legs that can make it harder for them to get up. They can have what we call angular limb deformities, which is where the legs are crooked kind of side to side. Or they can also have contracted tendons, which is where their legs are kind of angled back, like in kind of in a C, to where their knees are forward and their hooves are pointed back, or they're up on their toes without their heels going down. And there's things we can do to kind of help them out with that. But those, especially the contracted tendons, can be really, really painful. And so making sure that we provide pain medication and support, while also making sure the foal, because if it hurts to get up and hurts to suckle, then a lot of times they won't do that. So sometimes we have to help them out by putting in a feeding tube and helping them eat that way, so they're not, they don't get behind the eight ball.
I think maybe it would be helpful just for folks like me who don't know a lot to understand a bit more about the horse's anatomy when it comes to the legs. And you mentioned sort of on their toes, but if I sort of think about hooves and legs and horses, it's a little bit different than maybe you might just assume, right? The horses are kind of standing on their toes as it is, as far as I understand it.
Sure. And so their hoof is essentially our middle finger or middle toe. And so the when I say that standing on their toes, it's the tip of their hoof, or the front part of their hoof, is called the toe, and then the back part of their hoof is called the heel. And so it's a little bit different to the human heel, but the horse heel is just the back of that hoof.
Okay. So that makes sense. So when you've got a foal that is, basically, let's say we've got a foal that is otherwise, pretty healthy. It's achieved those milestones. It's suckling, it's moving around and so forth. Let's say the mother mare has passed the placenta, which is not really a big part of our conversation today. Then what happens? I mean, then there's got to be some milestones down the road.
Sure. And so really once – kind of the big things for the foal is once they get past the first week, that's great. And usually they're doing pretty well. That first week is the biggest risk factor for a lot of the major diseases. Sepsis is the biggest one, but there's a lot of other things that can potentially go wrong in that period. Once you get past the first week, that kind of gets you past that first set of neonatal problems. And then once they get to a month, that's kind of another milestone. And there's some other things that can go wrong with foals after that point, but kind of just making sure they're growing, they're healthy, they're staying with the mare, those sorts of things. One of the other, especially during the first couple days of life, if a foal doesn't stay with its mare, if it starts to wander off, that can be another kind of warning sign. But then foals start to get more creative and more independent and whatnot as they get older. And then really sometime, depending upon the situation, somewhere between about 4 and 6 months is when foals start to get weaned. And so around that, between 1 and 6 months of age, kind of the biggest problems we worry about are pneumonia and diarrhea are probably the two biggest causes of problems in that range. And so the main things to watch for in general, how are they up? Are they running around? If they're in a field with other foals, are they staying with the other foals, or are they kind of off by themselves? Normal is with other foals. Abnormal is off by themselves. If they start to have diarrhea, if they start to look like they're huffing and puffing and not like they're having trouble breathing, those are kind of warning signs. And then the next thing is around 4 to 6 months of age is also when we would want to start a plan of vaccination.
I was gonna bring that up. I wasn't sure how early a foal would start to get its vaccines. Are the antibodies in the colostrum enough to sort of get it through for a while?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so not only are those antibodies in the colostrum enough to get them through, if you try and vaccinate them too early, those antibodies in the colostrum can actually interfere with their ability to mount an immune response to vaccination. And so it seems counterintuitive, but when they have good colostrum and good, passive transfer of immunobodies, then you want to wait till there's good data to show waiting till about 5 or 6 months is actually better to start their primary series of immunizations. And that way they can mount a good immune response. And then once that series starts, it's really important that they get the whole series. And so the first vaccination starts things off. It's the second vaccination or the booster that really mounts a solid immune response. So it's really important that not only they get their first shot, but that they get second and ideally a third set in that series.
And is timing critical?
Timing's pretty important. And so, you know, like I said, you don't want to start too early, around 5 or 6 months. And then usually we'll vaccinate at 3 to 4 week intervals beyond that. And, you know, a little, there's obviously some leeway. And I'll just put out another, I believe you talked to Dr. Long earlier in the season about how we've been having a very, very aggressive season for Triple E or Eastern equine encephalitis. And also there's not so much in Florida right now, but in the Carolinas, there's actually very active West Nile. And it's been so wet.
Right.
Anyone that's gone outside is aware of how early and often the mosquitoes are coming after you. And so the mosquito population in Florida is very affected with Triple E. And so vaccination is really, really important because I promise that's not a disease anyone in the listening audience wants to see.
When I spoke with Dr. Long, I don't remember exactly when it was some months ago, it seemed like there were already a number of cases in Florida.
Yeah, it's been a rough year for Triple E. And so, you know, making sure that those folks get vaccinated is really important. And so kind of the core vaccines are then, you know, encephalitides. So Eastern equine encephalitis, West Nile virus, Western equine encephalitis, although that's not really a problem here, but they tend to go together. Tetanus is really important. And so those are probably the most important ones. And then there are some other kind of optional vaccines that can go along as well. But Eastern, Western tetanus and West Nile are really, really quite important.
Have some of the horses who have been affected with Triple E been foals?
I've personally seen horses with Triple E as young as about 8 months.
Mm.
So it's highly unfortunate.
It really is. So with the vaccination protocol, are these vaccines administered in a series of injections?
Yes. And so they're administered in a series of injections that go in the muscle. And like I said, you want to start around 5 or 6 months, and then those go about every 3 to 4 weeks for ideally three series.
And is each separate vaccine administered in a separate injection, or they can kind of some of them be grouped together?
Yeah, so some of them, it depends on your veterinarian's preference and kind of which ones they do, but there are vaccines available that have all of those. So Eastern, Western, tetanus, and West Nile all in one vaccine. And so the horse only has to get one shot, so to speak, to get all of those together.
Now, horses are pretty big animals, even if foals are smaller versions of horses. How much volume are we talking about?
Well, it's a pretty small volume. And so depending upon the vaccine, most of them are between 1 and 2 cc's.
Oh, so, that's not bad.
No, it's not bad.
So with these various maladies that they could be at risk of without vaccinations, do you find that the rates of vaccination are quite high?
I would say in general, most horse owners are awesome about vaccinating their horses. And in general, those vaccination rates are high. There's always, you know, some can slip through the cracks. And then sometimes, you know, it's if it's not, you know, either not a priority or sometimes if money's tight and things like that, that can certainly, you know, fall lower on the priority list than some other things. And so I would say in general, most of the horses out there are vaccinated, but there's certainly, you know, I would say the majority of Triple E cases we see are those horses that either are not vaccinated at all or certainly haven't been kept up because it takes continued annual boosters after. It's not just that series as the foal. They have to continue to get boosted as they grow older.
Can vaccines be administered only by a veterinarian?
They don't have to be administered only by a veterinarian. Some of the vaccines are available over the counter.
Oh, well, so then, you know, that probably makes it somewhat more affordable for folks who find that the money is not as plentiful.
Yeah, and that certainly, I would say getting vaccinated is better than not getting vaccinated. In an ideal world, I would certainly recommend getting vaccinated by the veterinarian because it's knowing how that vaccine has been handled the whole time is really important. And so most of those vaccines need to stay refrigerated. And so it's some things can happen along that line. And so if push comes to shove, sure, getting vaccinated is 100% better than not getting vaccinated. In an ideal world, that would happen by your veterinarian.
Yeah, with the with the rates of vaccination being pretty high, would you say that it's kind of high across the board as far as all horses are go, as far as all horses go, or are horses that have different sort of purposes vaccinated at different rates? That is to say, someone you might imagine that someone who has bred a horse deliberately for some sort of sport, right? Racing or jumping or something like that, probably is, they've got an investment, right? This is sort of an economics issue for mm-hmm. them as well. Do you feel that the rates for vaccination are higher among those animals than maybe just like a pasture horse?
I would say in general, I don't have those data to back up that statement. That's probably true, but I don't really have the data to back that up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to call out anybody. I honestly think it's remarkable that people, are able to keep horses. I have limited experience with horses myself, but I will say that in the limited experiences I have had with horses, I understand how people really do develop a strong bond with this kind of animal, right? Like I've had strong bonds with many like cats before, but it's a different sort of relationship, right? Horses offer this kind of like there can be a really big connection. When you're riding a horse, this horse is really doing something for you and you are physically like connected to the horse at the time. And, people can probably develop strong emotional bonds because they're intelligent animals. They are useful, right?
Yeah.
So probably people who have horses in general really want to take good care of them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, nobody gets a horse because they, they're a lot of work and they're they're a source of great joy and horses are awesome. And so like when you have a newborn foal and you can go in a stall and, talk to a newborn, they're great. And it's super fun to watch them grow and develop their own personalities and they're great. And so that, that human animal bond is super strong. And, horse people are definitely a different breed, so to speak. And, mm-hmm. and I'll count myself among them. And it's a great connection. And they develop their personality super, super young. And so a personality of a foal is it's a good window into how that animal is going to be as an older horse. And it's fun to watch them develop.
I want to talk about that when we come back. We got to take a short break now. I want to remind everyone, this is Animal Airwaves Live. I'm Dana Hill. My guest is Chris Sanchez. And this is Animal Airwaves Live. We're going to be back right after this, but first, Academic Minute, I believe, is what we're going to hear. Hi, welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live on WUFT-FM. I'm Dana Hill. This is our Fall 2018 membership campaign and the first Friday of that campaign. And if you do enjoy Animal Airwaves Live, I hope you will take an opportunity to pledge your support if you are not already a member of the station. Our website is WUFT.org. You can pledge securely there and leave us a comment. Let us know what you think about the show and the station. So before we get back to the show, I want to remind you that we've been talking about foals, and my guest is Dr. Chris Sanchez from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, and we had been talking sort of about foals and their birth and then their kind of getting along with vaccines and so forth. And just before we went to a break, we sort of hinted at like the personalities of horses, and horses are really outstanding animals. The personality of a foal, when does it kind of start to come into view? When can you really begin to distinguish one foal's personality from another?
It starts pretty quickly, and I would say it's hard to say for sure, but I would say that you probably start to see their personality coming in really within days. And then as they start to get older, it starts to become stronger and stronger. And definitely there's a component of environment and training and how they're handled. And, just like any form of animal training, the more positive reinforcement goes a long way. And so, but, they do turn into big animals. So they do need to understand kind of boundaries and things like that. But if you treat them with kindness and go along that way, then they, it'll kind of go from there.
This isn't exactly a veterinary question, but at what age do foals start to really kind of interact with each other? When do they begin to like sort of maybe even separate from their mothers and become a bit more independent?
As they get older, the kind of the radius that they'll leave from their mares will increase, but they'll start playing together. As soon as you start turning them out together, usually within, you know, the first week or so of life, they'll start to interact and play with each other.
Yeah, that is quite early. I mean, but like you said, these are animals that have a strong need to be able to be kind of mobile.
And they got to keep up with their mare pretty quickly.
I mean, when the mare has delivered, you know, if you're going by like the length of gestation, could she pretty quickly be pregnant again?
So the earliest, and I mentioned this when I was talking about diarrhea, the earliest they'll come back into heat is somewhere around, you know, a week or so. And I would say most of the time sometimes they'll get bred on that full heat. Sometimes it'll be later, and then they'll cycle about, you know, every, 28 days or so beyond that. But the earliest would be about a week.
What, if anyways, does that affect the way that the mare and the foal interact? If she's pregnant again, does that change anything?
Not really.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
I mean, so she'll continue to lactate, and then we'll continue to like nurse the whole time.
Yeah, because remember, it's a long gestation.
Right.
So the next one's not coming until well after this one's been weaned.
And so by then, the foal is barely even a foal anymore, right?
Oh yeah, they'll be, like I said, most of the time foals need to get weaned around 4 to 6 months. Sometimes it'll be a little bit earlier for different reasons, sometimes a little bit later for different reasons. But most of the time, by the time that foal is 6 months of age, they're pretty independent and off their merry way.
So at what point does the foal care cease being foal care, and you're sort of treating it more like an adult horse, especially in terms of like, you know, the veterinary treatments that it might need?
And I'd say most of the time you can kind of group them into neonates. So the first 2 weeks of life or so, and then suckling foals. So we'll be up until about the, you know, 4 to 6 months when they're weaning. Then weanlings will be from that 4 to 6 month age or so time between when they get weaned up until they're about a year. And then once they get to a year or yearlings, then they're really, you know, yearlings, 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, those guys are pretty much treated like adults from a veterinary standpoint. So from a veterinary standpoint, by the time they're a year of age, then they're pretty much treated like adults.
At what point will a foal be considered ready to breed? Is that substantially later on? I mean, it's not a foal anymore, presumably.
Yeah. So most of the time, not before they're two.
But, okay.
Ideally, a little bit later than that.
Yeah. So we were talking about going back quite a bit here. We were talking about delivering the foal. What's if a veterinarian is not there? Presumably some other qualified people are there, trainers or horse owners or you know, caretakers or so forth. What kind of things do you need in order to safely help a mare deliver a foal?
In an ideal situation, you don't have to help them deliver a foal. And so I would say the vast majority of times a veterinarian is not there during delivery. Delivery in the mare is really pretty quick. And so from the time she first starts to have that foal until the time the foal is all the way out is going to be less than 20 minutes. And so it's pretty quick. And so in an ideal world, that all happens on their own and they don't need much assistance. Again, ideally it's good if somebody, you know, qualified people are there. And there's certainly plenty of mares in the world that foal with no one present and can handle it quite well on their own. Thank you very much. And mares are pretty sneaky, and they tend to foal at night, and the mares themselves most of the time would much prefer to foal when no one's looking. Again, kind of back to the prey species sort of thing. And so it's better to foal on their own from their perspective. And so there's a lot of things that are out there for foaling monitors and video cameras and things like that, so people can watch, if, you know, farms that have a night watch, where those people can watch and from afar to see. And, you know, the people that do this all the time, they're really good farm managers, can be very, like, really in my experience, more accurate than most veterinarians on when a mare is going to foal. And so people that have seen, you know, hundreds or thousands of foals born, they can look at, they know their mares and they can know pretty well within the day about when those foals are going to come. That in the absence of that, there are systems like foal alert systems that can actually things you can have on the mare that will send an alert to a beeper when that foal starts to come and things like that.
Ah, yeah. Well, I mean, it wouldn't seem to be too important were it not for the fact that you said there are certain milestones that need to be observed so that you know that the foal is on the right track.
That or if there's a problem. And so if there's a problem, like a dystocia, if that foal is not coming out normally or if it gets stuck, things like that, you have to act very quickly because of the domestic species, horses are probably the ones that are by far the most time sensitive to delivery. And so dystocia or any problem in that foal coming out in the mare is an absolute emergency. If it doesn't get resolved quickly, that it puts the mare and the foal in jeopardy.
Okay. And so that can probably people who have ever delivered babies might probably know what a dystocia is. But it could potentially be something that cuts off oxygen to the foal. It could be something that maybe even causes some physical injury.
It doesn't. It's usually if the foal is so I mentioned contracting tendons before. So sometimes the way a foal normally comes out is four legs first, one leg slightly in front of the other. So the shoulders are offset when they're coming through the birth canal because the shoulders are the place where they tend to – shoulders and hips are the biggest, widest place of the foal, and that's the easiest place to get stuck in the birth canal. So ideally the foal comes head on top of its front legs, one front leg in front of the other, so the shoulders are offset. And then once they get patched the shoulders, usually they come out pretty well. If for some reason the head is back or one foreleg is back, then it's gonna get stuck coming out. And so that would be one of the problems. If they come out back end first or upside down, those can also be a problem with them getting stuck. And I mentioned, if a foal has a birth defect or, you know, an abnormality in its conformation. So if the legs are contracted to where they can't stretch out normally, then that can be a common cause for dystocia. And most of the time, hopefully they can get repositioned and pulled normally. But, there are certainly rare circumstances where we do need to perform a C-section in horses.
A veterinarian can probably tell the orientation of the foal prior to it being delivered.
Typically not, interestingly, because the foal changes position really pretty quickly right before birth. And so in the earlier stages of gestation, they're on their back, with the foal's back towards the mare's belly, facing down. And then before delivery, the foal will position itself for delivery and flip over and get in position to be foaled. So how the foal's positioned earlier doesn't mean how it's positioned during delivery.
The mare delivers standing up?
Most of the time, occasionally they'll deliver standing up. Most of the time they're lying down.
Ah, okay. We've sort of talked about the delivery process. We've talked about sort of the vaccinations and, you know, how to know that your foal is healthy. And as we sort of wind down the program, and what are some things that people should be aware of? You know, I mean, not that horse owners are unaware. Most of them, as you said, are pretty attuned. So what are some things maybe the public sort of might have misunderstandings about?
That's a good question. And I think that it's a pretty broad one. I would say in general, like I said, most of the, the solid breeders, the places that have big breeding farms and full out a bunch of mares a year, those people are awesome. They know what they're doing most of the time. And they're, obviously they work closely with their veterinarian and have a very good relationship with their veterinarian. And so they're usually pretty clear on when to call, what problems they have and all those sorts of things. You know, everybody's got to have a first foal sometime. And so for the newborn horse owners, I think probably the most important thing is to make sure you have those conversations with your veterinarian ahead of time. Know what you're getting into, know what to expect, and kind of make sure that you know when to call, how to get a hold of them, those sorts of things. I mentioned some things that are common reasons, common things foals do when they're not healthy. And so if they're lying down a lot, if if they're the mare's bag is or udder is really important to kind of pay attention to. So if that mare's udder staying big, streaming milk, or kind of the converse is if a mare's not making enough milk, if a foal's at the udder all the time and kind of banging the udder, foals are super selfish. And so when they're hungry, they are pretty adamant about it. And so if a foal's up at that mare's udder all the time and is banging away and not seeming satisfied, that's another cause for concern because it means the mare's probably not making enough milk to satisfy that foal, and they can get really tired and hungry pretty quickly. So that would be another reason to call kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum. That might be a problem with the mare versus a problem for the foal. And if a foal has diarrhea, if it seems like it's breathing hard or faster than normal, those are all kind of things that can alert an owner that they should get their veterinarian out there.
This is really good advice. I really enjoyed talking with you, Dr. Sanchez. I'm glad to have you back. It's been a couple years.
Yeah.
So thanks for coming by. I always enjoy these horse topics because, like I said, I don't have a lot of experiences with them. So I feel like I learn a lot every time we discuss horses on this show.
Always a pleasure.
So thank you so much to all of you who have listened today. Just one more time, I want to remind you that this is our membership campaign here, our fall 2018 membership campaign. And if you have not yet become a member of WUFT and you listen with any regularity, I hope you'll take this opportunity to move from being a mere listener to being a member, being a sustainer even. You can go to our website, wuft.org, and pledge securely there. You can also go to our telephone number, which is 352-392-9838, or toll-free 800-338-9838. While you're there, you can let the operator know what programs you really enjoy and leave some comments for us. You can do the same thing on our website, where you can also see a list of the different thank you gifts available. But most importantly, pledge for the programming that you hear on this station. Animal Airwaves Live is something that we bring you each Friday, preceding Science Friday, which is coming up in just a couple minutes. So those of you who enjoy this sort of science block on a Friday afternoon, hope you'll take the opportunity to support the show. I'm Dana Hill. My guest has been Dr. Chris Sanchez. Thank you so much to Richard Drake for directing the program, and Sarah Carey and her folks over at the College of Veterinary Medicine for their help. Thanks for listening. I hope you'll join me again next week for another episode of Animal Airwaves Live. Bye-bye.